It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Hello.
And joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
The biggest news in the world is happening.
Heck.
Everybody, it seems that Bungie and Activision have split up after a loving relationship of a good 9 years.
Which side are you on, Scott?
I'm definitely on Bungie's side. Yeah. I mean, you messaged me last night in all caps, just going, oh my God, check Twitter, Jesus Lord. And I was in the middle of a good Darksiders session, but I left that.
It's because
to see what was going on.
Literally prophesied this news. At 4:30 yesterday, Scott Tilford slacks me up and he says, hey, did you know that Bungie's contract with Activision is ending next year? And he was like, what happens after that, Josh? What happens after that? We need to do the editorials on it. Then later that night, look what happens. So if anything, it's your fault.
Well, it's good. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
This is literally like some sort of captive escaping the basement and breathing again. So I'm pretty glad that they're out there. What are you guys' initial reactions, Rach? What was yours?
My initial reaction, it can only be a good thing.
I did
not really like what they were doing in recent years. Like, didn't like Destiny.
I don't think that many people did.
Yeah.
And so, because I was talking, like, many times I'll go back to the Master Chief Collection and play some old school Bungie, and I'll remember just how wholesome and passion-filled those games were. And then, it's not to say that Destiny doesn't have aspects of that. Destiny's art direction is amazing, graphically, all that kind of stuff. And there's little aspects of lore that are in there. And obviously, in the coming weeks or whatever, we'll probably get some big deep dives. Kotaku will probably do some sort of investigation as to the exact pairing off, the way that sort of game rolled out, like exactly how much was Bungie and how much was Activision. But it is worth, like you said, like kind of passing out, like Destiny has not been regarded very well even since the beginning.
No, it's a weird one because it has got its fan base and it has a lot of players despite what Activision say. Bad sales to Activision are like the best sales to
everybody else.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, obviously there are people who love Destiny, but for a lot of players, me included, I don't know about you guys, but it never gripped me in the way that I wanted it to, in the way Halo did, even though the core shooting of it, and like you said, a lot of the art, a lot of the lore, it's really good, but for some reason, it didn't quite come together for me personally.
Yeah, your key word there was as much as you wanted it to. That was the exact same for me, because I bought it because my friends had it, and then I got two because there was all this hype about it. I was like, oh, they've learned,
everything.
Two will be better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think because I really wanted to like it and just didn't, it was disappointing.
Yeah.
So how many hours-ish have you guys like put into it? Like, did you, because for me, it was the same thing. It was like, oh, this plays immaculately and I want to give it a good chance. And I remember really trying to give it the benefit of the doubt because it was like the new IP, and because it's Bungie, I was like, well, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. And you watch all the making ofs of Halo and stuff, and you see the same team members carry across. And so playing Destiny 1, that whole thing with the Grimoire cards and the lore being in the loading, well, being on an app and being on the website, and I was like, ah, it's fine, like, there's probably enough in there you can just pick up. No, it was very much threadbare. And then as Kotaku sort of revealed, it was mainly down to actually Bungie at the time deciding to rework their story the last minute.
Yeah, it was a really difficult development process for that, because it was going to be originally completely different. It wasn't going to be a first-person shooter. Then at the end, it all, like, eventually came into place. So the discarded story, the main story about 6 months before, and had to piece it back together. Yep. It was just kind of, it was, in a way, it's got sort of a miracle that that game was as good as it was, considering how much trouble it had to develop it.
Because I was gonna say, yeah, that's why I wasn't talking about like hours invested. Because did when you guys played that, did it mostly just feel like it was just a loot grind? It just felt kind of soulless.
I played, I got Destiny 1 when the Taken King, is that what it was?
Destiny 1, yeah. That was the first time they had a nice bunch of cutscenes and it seemed like they had more
Taken
story
King,
content.
I got it, so that was like the third expansion, I'm going to say. I got it, so quite late on. So it was already established and people were already playing it. I got to end level and I did maybe one raid. So I didn't play it that long. I played it a decent amount. Destiny 2, I played one evening.
Are we right about
Taken King being Destiny 1? Because it was like Curse of Osiris and all that kind of stuff. Taken King.
Taken King's Destiny 1.
Is that what it was called? For some reason,
it's definitely called The Taken King, but this speaks to the wider problem because there's so much DLC and plugged in stuff. Obviously, they were trying to hit certain, assumedly, publisher mandated release dates with their main installments, and then they just sort of released DLC to try and make the
DLC, it was because they re-released it as part on the disc as well, so it became Destiny The Taken King.
Is that what you were going to get into?
I was going to say, that's sort of where the Destiny 1 sort of like ship started to sort of right itself, and people were like, actually, there is something really good there that if it keeps on getting supported, we can really enjoy. And they kind of gained a lot of respect back from that point onwards. I played Destiny 1 a decent amount. Yeah. I was in there for the alpha. I remember being so excited.
I was so excited for it.
And I was playing through the missions, and I was like, well, there's going to be way more than this at least when it comes out. And
Do you remember that?
That's all it is.
Like they put it was like the alpha and then the beta, and it was like, well, they must have more. Yeah. No, they didn't. No. It was just that again. Like that was the first inkling that something was really wrong. Yeah. Was just this complete lack of content. But speaking of goodwill, kind of coming back to it, the recent DLC, the Forsaken stuff, the stuff with Cade Six going missing and stuff, that apparently tripled their player base. And so
I hear good things.
Yeah, same. And so I actually reinstalled Destiny 2 last night in the wake of all this. I was like, I just want to, because I've always loved the shooting. I love Bungie. Like they're just my one of my favorite devs. They should be a Naughty Dog. They should be way up there.
Yeah.
And it sucks that they're not at the minute. But yeah, in terms of goodwill, it's seemed like Forsaken brought a whole bunch of people back. And if you go into BungieTracker.com or whatever and you look at the player numbers, it seems like they had about 800,000 players as of like last April-ish, mostly across the year, which wasn't enough. It actually fell from a hole. It was like 8 million at one point across the lifetime. But it had fallen all the way down. And then assumedly, the stat that they put out was that it had tripled it. So assumedly, that's a good, healthy plus million number.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably not enough to Activision, but compared to Call of Duty.
Well, that's the one of the last report. No, it was, I think, for the Forsaken DLC, Activision said it didn't sell as well as they wanted it to, even though a lot of fans really loved it. It seems like it was getting on the right track. I think with that bit of DLC, it was just a bit too late for Activision. It was like, well, we're not seeing the numbers we want, and even if this has sort of tripled the player base or anything, it's still nowhere near the level that we need it to be, which is like outrageous for one, just the weird expectations they have.
Yeah, it's like, at what point do you draw the line under like business mentalities and corporate mentalities and making money and just greed? Like, because we've seen Square Enix do the same thing, and I was going to make the comparison to IO Interactive, who split away from Square but kept the Hitman IP because Square Enix were just like, well, we don't care, it's not making enough, even though Hitman is a known quantity, people know Agent 47 like in terms of iconography,
and
they didn't care.
Look where that is now.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And it's like, I mean, the new games are the best ones going. They have the resources to make it fan first kind of thing. But it's interesting thinking of IO Interactive, who used to be associated with publishers and this big AAA thing, but it's actually with a very small, in the grand scheme of things, a small studio.
Yeah.
And now Bungie are like almost an indie studio, but with a massive IP.
This is the fascinating thing to me, because when they split up with Microsoft over a decade ago, the reports, again, from Jason Schreier was that they were cheering and popping champagne, and it sounds like they're doing the exact same thing now.
Yes.
And they've done this twice over the past like 10 years. They've got into bed with a big publisher and it hasn't really worked out for them for whatever reason, creatively speaking or whatever, I don't know. But it hasn't worked for them. So now do they get into a bed with another publisher or do they try to embrace this sort of
that's
indie mentality
that
they've got?
That's one of the fascinating things, because you remember, like, you're a big Halo fan. And
I don't know if you call me a big Halo fan. I had Halo 2.
I will quote Rachel Shackleton, Halo 2 is my jam.
Halo 2 was my jam. I played Halo 2. I played Halo 3 on the 360. I loved that as well. But 4 didn't have that same spark. I'm going to say 4 was when...
That was when it first got handed off to 343.
Right.
So you could kind of tell.
Got you, yeah. So you could tell there was a big difference there. I didn't play ODST or anything like that. I played Halo 5 recently. It was okay. So I don't know if
they never managed to bring it back. That's the thing. You can tell the difference.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing. Like, they initially split from Microsoft back in 2007 and everyone was like, oh my God, what are they going to do? Because Halo was at the height of its popularity back then. Halo 3 just came out or whatever. I think it was in the same year that Halo 3 came out. Maybe that was 2006. Either way, they split from Microsoft and then we still got Halo ODST and Halo Reach.
Yeah.
But that was them still fulfilling, I guess, contractual obligations to Microsoft. And then it was like, well, what are they going to do next? And then they just signed with Activision in 2010. And even if you predate the Microsoft stuff, like you were saying, it hasn't worked out for them. I would obviously say that Halo worked out for them.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it obviously, it worked out for them. It made Bungie like the massive name and why so many people care today. But I guess by the end of that, when they were just doing Halo, obviously they were kind of, or at least in their opinion, sort of creatively stifled. They were like, we don't want to work on Halo anymore. We can do whatever we want. And then I think the same thing has happened with Activision.
Well, let's talk about what we want to see them do. Like, what do you want to see them do now?
I think they want to take everything that went well from the Activision games. Like, for example, like, eventually, the multiplayer in Halo 5 was great. Oh, hang on. No, that was 343.
You want to go back to Reach?
Was 343. Sorry. Reach. I didn't actually play Halo Reach, but I hear good things.
It's very good.
So good.
A lot of people say that's the best one. That's madness, kind of. You'd be one of those people. A lot of younger people come flying in saying the Reach is the best one. It's because that's what they grew up with.
Yeah.
That's their Halo 2 or 3.
Because I grew up with Halo 3 and Reach.
Right.
And Reach was when I was sort of really into Halo, which is weird.
Yeah.
I did play the originals, but maybe because I didn't have online gaming back then, Halo 2 didn't grip me in the way and I was kind of disappointed with the story. Halo 3, I was more into Call of Duty at the time. Then Halo Reach was like the
that's
one.
That's what got you
that
in.
Was the one.
Because Halo 2 was your introduction to the series.
I'm just a little bit behind you. I think I'm a little bit older than Josh.
That's so interesting though, because like only a few years separates like a generational approach to it. Because like you and Ewan both came in, I think, on 3 and then Reach, and maybe ODST to some degree.
I played 2, but I wasn't really necessarily interested in it.
Whereas like I remember the Xbox launch and Halo being this massive deal, and then oh my god, Halo 2 is going to be online, and it was like, all these like seismic things. But that's the thing, talking about what they're going to do next. Like, you know, Microsoft are in this massive stage right now where they're trying to buy up a whole bunch of studios. There are people outside of us descending from
the
windows. Which won't make any sense to the audio recording, but someone's trying to clean our windows, not to worry. So if they're going to try and recapture that, Microsoft are in this big old, like, sort of, I don't know, status right now where they're trying to, like, recapture a whole bunch of different studios. And we saw them snap up Obsidian and I forget what you call the other one that they got. It was In Exile.
In Exile, yeah.
And so it's like, are they going to make an offer to get Bungie back? And they do it?
Tell you what, they absolutely should. Yeah. They're doing all the right things because, let's be honest, 2018 was the year of Sony. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft are doing all the right things to combat
as a hell, because I was thinking Combat Evolved.
Combat Evolved, I was gonna say.
Hell, good lord. But also, I think that's the thing. I mean, you could, a lot of people associate Bungie with Microsoft, even though obviously Destiny was multi-platform. But if they went back to that, then that benefits them tenfold, because all of a sudden Bungie products are part of Xbox and Microsoft showreels again, and that's a massive deal for them.
Yeah.
And plus, they would then be able to say that a new Bungie game is coming to maybe the Xbox Scarlet or whatever the next Xbox
is.
It's
a huge deal.
Yes, but is that Bungie being a fool for the third time? Or like, should they stay independent and see how big they can get? Can they become a CD Projekt Red or something like that?
Yeah, because like, they could get back with Microsoft, like you said. Obviously, the Microsoft they split up with is not the Microsoft they are today. And the Bungie that split up with Microsoft is not the Bungie that's there today. So there will still be a sort of a renewal of that relationship in some ways, but it could be very beneficial. I don't think they make the same mistake 3 times in a row. I think they will try to be independent for at least a little while, see how it fares for them, and then maybe in the future, maybe then they can start.
Because I have a bit of an insider baseball question. Did you guys, when you started getting into Halo, did you follow the making of stuff and follow Bungie as like a team, like in terms of like all the videos they used to put out and the dev diaries and stuff?
Halo 1 came out?
Not Halo 1, but any of them really. It was mainly just across the 2000s. Like, did you know the people? Like Joseph Staten and what's his face? I can't even think of his name, the composer dude who ended up leaving.
Oh.
He made some of the best music in gaming history. Now I can't think of his name. Is it Michael Giacchino? It might be someone else. It's Marty O'Donnell. And Marty O'Donnell.
You're good with names.
Thank you. It's because I love the man. He, like, literally, the Halo theme is like the best video game music ever. But that was what I was going to mention. Did you guys keep up with that stuff initially or
at
all?
No, I'd call myself a lukewarm Halo fan.
Good, that's good.
At best.
That's good. How about you?
With me, it was only afterwards. It was sort of in retrospect.
Because you talk about, like, we talk about Bungie potentially being like an independent studio going their own way. The love that people quote unquote have for them is maybe generationally based, and only if you kept up with them as a group of devs kind of thing across the 2000s. Like, some people watching will remember the specific, they put a great dev diary out when they first showed Halo 2 off at E3, and they would say, oh my god, people actually love it, and like, oh, we've actually lived up to the hype and all that kind of stuff. I mean, say what you will about the ending, but whatever. And I love it, it's fine. But when they initially put it out, there was this huge surge around like, we're with you, we're totally with you as this group of people, and they'll need to tap back into that if they're going to go forward forward without publisher marketing spiel and all that kind of stuff? How much do you see them doing that?
Well, it's like,
or do you see them as like the Destiny
really
devs?
That's exactly it. It's really interesting when you say there's sort of a generational divide, because there will be people potentially even watching this who view Halo as 343 Studios as franchise and Destiny as Bungie's, which is
sickening,
sort of weird, but
not to poop on 343 altogether.
Of course not. I actually quite like them games.
Yeah, they're fine.
But so like I said before, the Bungie of today is very different from the Bungie of sort of their glory days. Mm. So I don't know if they still have that same sort of push behind them. I'm sure the fan base is still there in one form or another, but they're not at the heights of just leaving Microsoft and being able to do whatever they want. They've sort of had these two games. Some people really love them. Some people have not cared for them at all. So I'm fascinated to see what they do next, because I don't think it'll be a first-person shooter.
Do either of you see yourselves going back to Destiny in the wake of this? Because I immediately downloaded it and I was like, I'm going to support Bungie now and not Activision. So
in a world where I have too many games to play, absolutely hecking not.
I think that's totally important though, because that speaks to the overall like how you think of Bungie kind of thing.
Bungie need to win the love back.
Yes,
that's what it is.
That's the thing, and in terms of like I love using the word optics. In terms of optics, they need to. In terms of how they're perceived by the gaming industry or, you know, consumers and stuff, how much can they separate themselves as, like, actually, we were trying to do the best we could, and a lot of it was Activision's fault. Obviously, the reality of that's going to come to the fore in the next few weeks. But there's already an assumed publisher or the horrible, like, corporate mentality in devs or the artistry, and there's already that kind of thing that they can, not necessarily play into, but it might work in their favor.
They could quite easily play into it in a way, I think.
Yeah.
You're like, well, all those terrible business practices were Activision's fault.
We want to give you a DLC.
We don't want to do it, but you know, we won't do it in the future.
We wanted to keep Peter Dinklage and they wanted Northern North. But like, yeah, I mean, I guess because they did put an announcement out about more Destiny. They said they'll still be supporting it, obviously. They still own the IP and it's like got hundreds of thousands of people still playing it.
Of course, they'd be dumb not to.
Yeah, so do you guys think that you would come back on board if they did a Destiny 3? Or do you think at this stage they need to make a clean break and do something else?
Don't ask me that, you know the answer.
It'd be a new IP for you, I think.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Just new something IP for new. Me, I would yeah. try, yes. Destiny, unfortunately, I mean, you can't like every game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. For me, I didn't click with Destiny 2 at all. Like, I played a decent amount of Destiny 1, but I remember the first night I got Destiny 2 and I was just... Even just though it was story-based, mm-hmm. I wasn't even invested in that. I was
tell
like,
you what, tell me. You what, tell you what, the start... was very good.
See, I didn't like the start.
The start was very
the,
good.
The whole thing with Gaul and like the... Is it the first mission when the place is being sieged?
Compare that first hour of Destiny yes. 2 to the entirety of Destiny
Don't tell me this, Rich. That I didn't even like that bit. Never mind what comes afterwards.
But that's the thing. In terms of...
In my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, you're right in terms of they really prioritized the story. And like that was what they showed off at E3. That was what they showed off everywhere. It was like, now it's got a campaign. And then... But that just boiled down to big evil space alien wants to kill stuff.
Still.
And then it was something. It was more epic than what was in the first one.
It was epic.
Yes. And then we didn't have Ralph Fiennes doing that stupid voice thing, the old man, and he was like, I don't have time to explain why I don't have time to explain.
Ralph Fiennes?
I don't know, it was some old actor man, but the terrible lines like that, like I didn't even know this could happen until it did.
Yeah.
It's like, what is that? Like, and that's on Bungie's part. Like that's entirely on Bungie's part. There are some things to be held up in terms of what Destiny is and that still didn't land. Like, that wizard came from the moon, entirely Destiny. It's not like Activision are mandating them to do worse dialogue. And so like, you know, there are like a lot of people, are, I mean, including us, are completely going, well, clearly this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But if you actually drill it down, Destiny was Activision a mess.
Go on, charge $5 for this cosmetic DLC and also mess up this line.
Yeah, can you just sort of like that really well written thing that you had, Joseph Stanton? I mean, Joseph Stanton's not even with Bungie anymore. The last thing he wrote was Recore, and he was the dude that was one of the most integral parts of why the first games used to work. So maybe it's another sort of question as to, are Bungie who we think they are anymore? Because they're caught between they're the Destiny devs and, oh my God, Destiny.
I hope not.
No, I hope
not. I hope they change. I hope they try new things because innovation is, we need it. We need it. We need more indie games.
Yes, I would say so. In fact, that's a very lovely little pivot into talking about the way that indie games have sort of came along this generation, because we've seen like the rise of, I mean, obviously indie games have kind of come into their own, kind of just mostly since 2010. You've got the games like Limbo and Super Meat Boy and Fez and like Braid or whatever, sort of like being like, these are more put together things than just the sorts of things that we had towards the end of the 2000s.
Yeah.
And now like there's almost a term like double A or whatever you sort of give to, which I don't like, but you give to games like Abzu or Journey or, well, not Journey because it's not indie, but some games that have independent mentalities. But which one?
Cuphead?
Cuphead, kind of, although it was published by Microsoft, but Studio HDMR did start themselves and all that kind of thing. Yeah. But that's what I was going to say. Like, with this sort of increased like platform for indies, is that the new like B tier of gaming that we're missing? Because for the longest time this gen, it was big triple A's or nothing at all.
Yeah.
And now there's a whole middle bit, which is maybe what Bungie can fit into.
I think there is, but I can't see Bungie quite fitting into that. Mm. To me, they're sort of on the level
Morso's a thing.
I'm having a breakdown over here.
It's fine. We're just recovering from some shocking news.
I know. They're on the level of CD Projekt Red, in a way.
Yeah.
They can sort of operate in this AAA space without sort of needing sort of the money from like a huge, huge publisher, I think. So they're not quite in the AA sort of standard. I think they're a bit too big for that.
Oh, no, the Destiny IP is AAA.
Yes.
But in terms of how they monetize their fan base and how they go forward, like, are they then regarded as a AAA developer? Like, yes.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about team sizes and where they go and how much Destiny, in terms of optics, is regarded as this big Activision platform right next to Call of Duty.
This is where things get muddy. I'm having a crisis.
Freaking out.
This has been the news all day. This is where things get muddy, because although Bungie did develop Destiny 1 and 2, as we know, they weren't the only developers on there. They had huge help from Vicarious Visions and High Moon Studios, because these games were a massive undertaking. So now that they've split, when you're talking about like sort of player sizes, they're going to need a lot of people to work on this franchise, but they've also got another deal with NetEase, I think, to make another game.
Yeah, so they just signed that.
Yeah, they just signed that last year. So where do they get all the personnel from? They had help from two other studios before. I don't want to see them sort of spread themselves too thin. I want to see them make sort of a one new product that sort of sells us on Bungie as this independent property. But they might need the help of another publisher, another team or something like that.
Well, I was going to subvert that all together and say, what do you guys think of the impact of crowdfunding and Kickstarter and stuff like that? Are they the kind of devs that can lean into that and be like, hey, all you old school Bungie fans, give us a tenner?
They are, but I don't want
to. I mean, I'd give them a tenner.
I know, I don't like it.
Maybe I wouldn't.
I don't like it.
Why not?
Because you can't go from making Destiny to going on Kickstarter. Yeah. I'm sorry.
The Shenmue devs did.
The Shenmue devs did. They didn't make Destiny, even if it did have bad
Shenmue deals. Shenmue 2 was AAA, wasn't it? Yeah.
Which one?
Shenmue 2 was pretty.
Oh, yeah, God. That's one of the most opulent, over the top, budget was ridiculous games ever. Yeah.
Okay, you can't really compare it to that.
I guess in terms of like someone who clearly has funding, but leaning into a fan base and getting the fan base to go forward with
someone
them.
Who is capable.
Because
that's the thing for me, it's more the precedent that would set. If someone on the level of Bungie went to sort of crowdfunding Kickstarter, then my God,
like, that's more maybe that's more of like a perception of what Kickstarter and crowdfunding is, because we've seen Double Fine do it, and obviously they're, I don't even know what I would call them. They're certainly not AAA, but they're not indie either. But they have an indie mentality.
Well, it's like before they were bought up by Microsoft. Obsidian in Exile, they all crowdfunded some of their most recent games.
Yeah.
And that was a really successful partnership and relationship with the fans. But I don't know, if someone as big as Bungie for me doesn't
actually
quite fit that mold.
That's a potential shout in terms of restoring goodwill. Obsidian went away from, went and did their own thing, did Pillars of Eternity, and then came back to join Microsoft. And Pillars of Eternity is amazing.
True. Mm-hmm.
So like, it could be a thing where Bungie just take a step back. And because, I mean, you were reading Jason Schreier's book, which is a few years old now, but dove into the development of Destiny.
Yeah,
and half of Bungie didn't even want to do another first-person shooter.
That's why I said I think the next thing they do, because they've got Destiny, they've got that IP, that can be their sort of flagship first-person shooter franchise, whatever.
Thing.
And I think it's time for them to do a different genre or something. They wanted to when they were, well, some of the team wanted to when they were going to make the original Destiny. It didn't quite pan out. Now's the time. Now's the time I think they can experiment and try maybe crowdfund that. I don't know. Maybe do the double A sort of space, sort of move into that a little bit while you've still got this flagship title that can support this more risky adventure or something.
Well, I mean, if you go back, like Halo was originally third person, and I think originally it was like an RTS or something.
Yes.
And it gradually became first person because of what they did with Marathon. I think that was their first person thing. But
I guess we got Halo Wars as well.
I guess that was the Foundry.
Ooh,
or something?
What about something like
a
spin-off, kind of like what Halo Wars did for Halo?
Excuse me.
Obviously, I'm not 100% sure if Halo Wars was, obviously it was Microsoft, but I don't know who developed that.
It wasn't Bungie, it was given to someone like the Foundation or the Foundry or something, but or maybe the Coalition.
Something like that, perhaps, with Destiny, where it's still appealing to the core fan base, so it's still guaranteed pretty much to succeed, but it's new, innovative, different.
Well, I think you play on the lore side of it.
Here's my question to you.
Yes.
Whatever they do next, they're going to do a new Destiny, but the other projects they do, are they going to just be the Destiny studio, do you think, like they were with Activision?
I think, considering that the literal reaction to them being told in their own meeting was, hey, we've managed to break away from Activision, their literal reaction was popping corks and celebrating. I don't think they want to do Destiny for as long as they like need to. I think they want to satisfy the player base, and obviously they're invested in the lore and the franchise.
Yeah.
But I think the quicker they can get away from that, the better. Because, like I said, if you go back to those making of videos again, they're such a passionate little group of dudes. And I think that they're like a Naughty Dog. They'll likely have been bursting to do a million different things, and they're just constantly being funneled down first person avenues.
Yeah.
They're avenues that they've picked over the years, but it'll be interesting to see if they can do something else. I was going to talk about a little bit about, because when we were talking about like indie devs and like agency in the industry and stuff, I can't think of any other studio that's like CD Projekt Red, where they're fully, like they have developing mandates or whatever, and they publish, and they have full artistic creativity on both sides. Is there anyone else like them?
I guess Bethesda Softworks.
They're owned by ZeniMax. So like they that's optics though, because they totally come across like we're totally in control and we develop and publish everything.
Yeah.
But they're owned by ZeniMax. And CDPR might have a mother company, father company, whatever you call it, somewhere.
Yeah.
But I don't think they do. I'm sure they're entirely independent. But they're not thought of as an indie dev at all. Ever since The Witcher, especially since The Witcher 3.
It's kind of like Rockstar in a way as well. Like if you think of Rockstar as just this sort of powerhouse, but even they've got like a parent company, they sort of presumably have to kind of
take two.
But
I mean if you wrap that back around to the sorts of games they get to make, like you look at Destiny and you can look at it and go, this appears like a very corporately mandated, this is a first person shooter, very formulaic, it'll sell. But you look at something like Red Dead Redemption 2, and that thing is so experimental with its tone and how it lays out its story, and you can miss some of its most integral beats if you don't follow it the right way. And like, I kind of think of that Red Dead 2 as like the most expensive indie game ever, because they're so just, we're gonna make exactly this thing.
We don't care
about making it like accessible or whatever. And so like, maybe the core to making some of the best games is to separate from the publishers altogether, or to separate from the money grubbing mentality or whatever.
I mean, that's like the perfect thing on paper. I would like to think that works. I don't know. Like you said, there just aren't many sort of developers like this who don't sort of have anyone to answer to or whatever. Like Obsidian used to be the kind of like this great freelance guy.
That was why they went to Kickstarter.
Yeah,
they
want
to retain creative control.
But even they now are getting bought by Microsoft. So obviously there is something very beneficial in having that stability that I think of like a big publisher that does sort of, no matter what avenue you come from it, does produce better games in a way, because you don't have the fear of, oh my god, if we don't get this game right, we're going to close or whatever. Like, you have the stability of, okay, we're getting funding. Mm. We obviously have to take their notes or whatever, but we can still make this game our own in a way. I don't know.
Well, no, that's true. I mean, nuanced. You've got so much funding coming in. You've got all the ad campaigns. You have the brand recognition. You have all the boost that you get from being like, oh, we're a Capcom game, whoever it is that's publishing. But in terms of CDPR, they literally just said, we'll finish Cyberpunk 2077 when we're ready. Yeah. We don't care. There's no, like, well, you know, we obviously care, but there's no particular date that we're trying to hit, and that's what's better for the game itself. Do you see a future where, like, particular studios have IPs and they move away from the standard developer-publisher relationship?
Yes.
In this lovely utopian vision.
You mentioned IO Interactive earlier on, and that's kind of what they've done in a way. They split it from Square Enix, and then they got Hitman. I think they partnered with WB now, but, like, they own that Hitman IP.
Yeah.
And
they had to negotiate it away from Square Enix.
Yes, yeah, of course. But I think so, yes.
I like that in terms of preserving the artistic merit of it, but assumedly you have to have budgets that can facilitate those visions in the first place.
Yeah, obviously passion projects are the best projects, but with the current financial state of entertainment, etc., yeah, you've also got to be, you know, smart about it. So
I think so far, and it'll probably not continue, because most of the time, and if you like monitor like the history of the console wars and the way the industry's gone, Sony and Microsoft tend to flip flop. At the minute, Sony are prioritizing artistic integrity and do whatever you want, like God of War, Red Dead, Spidey, Days Gone, and Ghost of Tsushima, and all those different things. And they have just bought up Hideo Kojima, but it was like carte blanche, do whatever you want. Hence why Death Stranding looks insane.
Yeah.
And so, like, if that was under an EA or an Activision umbrella, you'd assume it would be more driven, like show the fans the third person combat, show them whatever it's going to be. And so I wonder if Sony are the ones to, at the minute they're leading the fore on the artistic stuff first, and they're not being so money grubby, and that, you know, they're letting Kojima space out his release date with Death Stranding as long as he needs, assumedly, but that might flip around next generation. So I guess at the minute it's kind of all up in the air, but something like the Bungie thing is fascinating.
It is really exciting to see what they do with it. Yeah, it's exciting.
I like the idea of an indie dev having a massive AAA IP, and then just like, what would a tiny little, I don't know, artistically focused studio do with something that could potentially make them millions? And it's like, that's a weird little paradigm thing.
It's going to be so exciting over the next few weeks just to see what happens next. Yeah. Like, if, because there's a part of me that really worries that we're giving Bungie themselves perhaps too much of the benefit of the doubt.
And that's
perhaps,
why I said about them messing up Destiny
exactly,
so much.
Exactly, yeah, like, and maybe putting too much of Destiny's faults or whatever on Activision, but I don't know. I guess part of it's like choosing good partners as well. Like you said, Hideo Kojima left Konami and went straight to Sony because he knew he'd get like the artistic freedom to do what he wanted. And I think that's kind of why Microsoft have bought up all these really interesting, creatively inspired sort of smaller studios like Obsidian in Exile.
And said, take your time.
Exactly, because I think they're going to push towards that same mentality into the next generation or whatever. So I think it's just about either choosing smart partners and not getting into bed with another Activision or EA or whatever, or striving out on their own.
It is those two, though, that seem to really stifle creativity. I mean, EA have shut down more studios than they've released their new IP. Like, it's, you know, so over the last few years especially.
I think either way, this can only be a good thing, because if they stay and do their own thing, it's going to be great. Mm. And if they decide maybe to do a little thing with Microsoft, that would also be good too, I think, in the long run.
Little Marty O'Donnell, just come back, because he's out in the wind somewhere. I thought you might have returned to Bungie, but I forget. But either way, I want a new, whatever they do, get Marty O'Donnell doing the music, because the Halo music is the best music that anyone's
now
ever done.
Now we remembered his name.
I remembered it before. I just thought it was Michael Giacchino, but he's the lost man.
Yes.
But not to worry. So this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. Let us all know what you think down in the comments below. Find us on social media, and you can use the hashtag WCGP to keep in touch with anybody else you might want to talk to. What?
Just you. I just want to talk to you all the time.
Is that why you're pointing at me right now?
That's why I've been in like all the podcasts this week, because I just can't.
Yeah, John, you've done three in a row. This lovely man.
I'm getting sick of myself, to be honest.
But not to worry. So yes, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Thank you so much for listening.
And joined, of course, by Josh Brown.
Thank you so much for listening.
I'm catch you guys next time.
I've stolen it. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.